Buona fortuna.
The best possible time to get rid of anyone is when there's a homicidal maniac on the loose.
You think it was Jean?
Who knows? Did you see the TV? They talked about that maniac. I discovered that the last of his victims was that little bitch at the party.
I don't like your sex habits.
Better that way.
Another girl slashed to death.
Oh, we should be grateful. He's eliminating all of our competition.
Julie Ward doesn't have a car, but she does have a blood fetish that turns her on. Who's to say the killer is not a woman?
You're
a man who met all your demands for more than 2 years.
Drop it.
We have people that come at night and pay overtime for a sauna and a massage.
Massage? Of course, a massage.
I'd like to see him dead. Poor Francine.
Inspector, that's exactly the way we found her.
Mister, get her off to the morgue.
Yes.
How are those experiments going with Godfellas' head?
A case like you should be considered psychopathological. How would you classify yourself? You depraved, filthy pig.
Hi people, this is Johnny Giovanni Lombardi from Stage Fright, and you are listening to the Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are, and that was Johnny Giovanni Lombido Radici in stereo, unfortunately. But anyway, welcome to the Hysteria Continues, episode 87. And we are back with another Giallo double bill, and we, in Giallo form, we are jet-setting off to, not actually Italy, but we're off to Paris, we're off to Spain, and we're off to Austria, but all with a distinctly Latin-Italian feel. So, yes, we have coming up The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward from 1970 with Edwige Fenech and George Hilton, and the Sextastic, the French sex murders with, well, we'll talk about that coming up, lovely little trashy number. But before we do that, time-honoured tradition, I'm going to introduce you to our fellow cohorts, our black gloved killers for today. So, Eric, how are you doing?
Nathan has a hangover.
I don't have a hangover.
You do?
I just said I was sleepy, that's all.
Eric's a tattletale.
He has a hangover, everyone.
How awful.
I know, Eric. How could you?
Joseph's wearing women's panties.
That's not a secret, though.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
No, that is not a secret. But Eric, apart from outing other people's bad habits or things, what have you been up to, and what kind of bad habits have you been up
well,
to?
Well, I've been to Spain, and I was drinking quite a lot of mojitos.
Mm. Did you dodge any harpoon guns?
No.
No.
Unfortunately, it never got that exciting.
Yeah. So you weren't speared on holiday?
Well, that would be telling.
Okay. Well, you save that for your Turkish prison jaunts, don't you?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you, Eric. Nathan, are you actually hungover?
No, I'm not hungover, but I did drink a little wine last night, which is something that Justin does a lot, so...
Well, that's not entirely true, is it, Nathan? I don't drink a little.
Totally true.
No, I said I don't drink a little wine.
You're right.
Yeah, Eric, please. Actually, last night I had a glass and a half, a very small glass and a half of wine. So I don't have a hangover this morning, but I only got about 4 hours sleep, so I'm a bit sleep deprived. So I'm going to blame that rather than the alcohol today. But so was it art or was it shart, Nathan?
What?
Well, it's kind of, we've got a friend of ours who says if you go and see an art exhibition, it's either art or shart.
Well, that's so, tonight.
Oh, that's tonight, is it? Okay.
And actually, I'll be the one doing the painting, so I'm going to guess the latter.
Oh, are you? What? In a kind of Yves Montand? Is it the one where they cover themselves in blue paint and roll around naked?
No, nothing that ridiculous. We each have a canvas, and we're going to paint.
Okay.
So in what kind of form? Why? What is this? And then someone bids on it, or?
No, it's just like a fun night out, like a date night. You know, we're just going to go to this art. You know, it's kind of like a little art class in one night. You know, you paint on this canvas, have wine and that kind of stuff, and, you know, paint a really, really beautiful painting.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. Well, will you take a photo and send it to us?
I will.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that. Thank you, Nathan. And Joseph, how are you doing?
Hello, dorks.
Short and sweet. So, apart from that, how's things going with Gory Graduation? Because I see lots of, on your Facebook page, you've got lots of roles announced.
Yes, we're going to sell you the whole seat, but you'll only use the edge.
Gosh, okay.
Cryptic. Actually, yes, we're pretty much done with casting. Basically, we're just tinkering with the script right now and getting this and that together, and hopefully next year will be the train leaving the station, as it were. So be sure to check us out on Facebook. I think Axel's doing that right now.
Yes, I think he is too.
Yeah, just look up Gory Graduation on Facebook. We would appreciate that.
Yes, so that's something to look forward to. So thank you. You're gonna keep us up to date in future episodes. So we will watch with bated breath, won't we, Eric?
Yes.
Okay, well...
Why? What are you insinuating?
Nothing.
Whenever you come to me, it's always with the tone of your voice, always insinuate something.
Eric,
like there's some subtext to it.
It's all in your mind. Exactly. So,
kind of like Toya's talent.
Oh, I hate you all.
I didn't say anything.
I didn't say anything either, did I? It was all Joseph. But anyway...
Well, it was all Joseph this time.
The thing is, last night I went ahead and posted the Facebook update, so I wouldn't have to do it today. And I said there would probably be a Toy and Susie reference, so I had to make one to kind of, you know, make up for that. So I couldn't be a liar. I didn't want to be a liar.
Well, fair enough.
But you chose to pick on Toya, though.
Well, Susie sucks, too, so there.
No.
No, actually, I love them both.
Yay.
Or do I?
Yeah, or do you? Well... Well, we shall find out. I'm sure we'll have another mass debate later. But before we get on to that, before we come on to that, let's chat about what we've been watching recently. So, Joseph, do you want to go first? Have you seen anything of note?
Yeah, I watched absolutely nothing.
Okay. Well, what was that like?
I really had a kind of a busy week, so I haven't really had a chance to watch anything. So, maybe next time.
Okay, fair enough. Eric, how about you?
Okay, well, as I've been away, I haven't really watched anything, but I did watch one Eurocrime film the other night, and the reason I'll mention it is because it ties into today's program. It was called Calibre 9, or Milano Calibro 9, and it's from 1972, and it's directed by Fernando De Leo, who did Slaughter Hotel, which we've covered in the past. The lead actress in the film is Barbara Boucher, who is in The French Sex Murders also, as we'll discover soon. It's kind of got a run-of-the-mill plot. A gangster-type dude gets out of prison and immediately has a host of people on his tail as they're convinced he's robbed them of $300,000, yada, yada, yada. It's a far more serious film, and it certainly has no element of trashiness that we've found in Slaughter Hotel. I was quite surprised. It's very grounded in reality, and, you know, there's not a whiff of cheese to be found in its 96-minute running time, whatever it is. It has a terrific ending, even though it is quite downbeat. And apparently Quentin Tarantino is a big fan of the movie. So it gets a thumbs up from me if you're a fan of that sort of Eurocrime genre from the 70s. But if you're expecting the sort of trashy excesses of Slaughter Hotel, you'll be sadly disappointed.
Well, that's...
Now, what's this called?
It's called Calibre 9.
What year?
1972, the same year he directed Slaughter Hotel.
Okay. Well, I love Slaughter Hotel, as you remember, so I need to check this out.
Well, it's funny because I remember you saying, Eric, when you were about to fly off, you remembered how many breasts were burst asunder during Mrs. Ward. And it's not the kind of film you can watch on a plane, is it?
No, I had it on my iPad and I was going to watch it at the airport, and suddenly it was just wall-to-wall boobies. And I was like, maybe I'll just put on The Simpsons instead.
Yes. Although,
did you run up and down the aisles like Marge? Let me off, let me off, let me off, let me off.
No, but in the past I have been tempted to do that.
I did spot a penis in the other film we're going to...
French Sex Murders.
Yes. Yeah. So that was a rarity for a giallo. Mm. Lots of boobs as well, though.
And a man's bum as well, isn't it?
Yes. So, again, we will come on to that in a little bit, but...
we're going to come on to the bum.
Well, who knows? The night is yet young, Eric. Anything else? No, that was it. Okay, well, thank you. And Nathan, how about you?
Yeah, I've watched a lot, actually.
Okay.
I went to the theater and watched As Above, So Below.
Mm.
I don't know. It's hard for me to rate this movie because I felt like, you know, when they get into the caverns and weird stuff, weird stuff starts happening. It just kind of I didn't really care about most of the characters. The only characters that are developed in any way, in my opinion, is the main woman and a friend of hers that's down there with her. The other characters are just there for, you know, to be killed off, in my opinion. So when they have these moments that's supposed to be emotional, it just didn't feel like it was. It didn't really pack the punch I think it should have. That being said, at the end when everything's going down, you know, everything's getting crazy and there's jump scares and all that, it's pretty good the last 20 minutes. But to me, you just got to have the patience to get to that 20 minutes at the end to make it worthwhile. So I would probably rate it middle of the road, maybe 5 out of 10.
Has it kind of sunk without a trace, or is it done well?
Actually, I don't know. I don't know how well that movie's done.
Actually, I believe it did well on its opening weekend. Not like wonderful, but I think it did, you know, well enough for a found footage horror film. But
okay.
I don't think it's done like extravagant numbers, but I'll look that up.
I will say this, the ending, I didn't expect, you know, the final shot in the film, I did not expect it because it's not very typical for this kind of genre. So,
okay, because I know I listened to the latest Scream Queens with Patrick, and he was talking about it and he gave his thoughts on it. And he basically gave away the ending, but he said it wasn't really spoiling that much, but he did say there was a character called Suey the Banshee. Was that right?
I don't remember Suey the Banshee. I don't remember that.
Apparently, yeah. So
unless it was a minor character.
Well, apparently, it's a French woman in it called Suey the Banshee, and I haven't seen it yet.
I remember the French girl, but I don't remember that being her name. Again, like the other characters are not very well developed at all.
Mm.
I'm looking at the IMDb listing, Justin, and there is a character called Suey. Just because they're listed as Suey.
I know.
S-O-U-X-I-E.
Yeah. So they couldn't spell it right.
FYI, the film was budgeted at $5 million, and it made $8 million in its opening weekend. So, yeah, it's doing okay.
It did all right. Okay. Well, it's good. It's funny to have a character called Suey. They did have... I don't know if it's not been credited, I don't think, on IMDb yet, but Toya played one of the gargoyles on Notre Dame, apparently.
Oh, your jokes bore me, Justin.
Oh, well, we'll see what kind of joke you've got later, Eric.
Yeah, a great one, I think you'll find.
Oh, have you? Because most time we talk before the show, and we say, so what kind of joke? What kind of joke have you got today? And then you go, oh no, I forgot.
Well, no, so. I have one lined up for today, and it's really good.
Okay, right.
Is it going to be better than the Soylent Rage? Because I think that was one of your best so far.
I think it's even better, yeah.
Okay, ooh. Right. Well, we shall see.
Big talk, so, little man.
Nathan, is there anything else you've been watching?
Yeah, three more. Okay. I finally watched Blood Glacier. I wasn't a huge fan of it. I didn't think it was that great. It did have a great line in it, and when the old woman starts screaming at this other person and says, you know, stop crying while you're eating that banana.
Yes. I'm like,
that line is so ridiculous. It just comes out of nowhere. I remember looking over at Grant, and we were just like, did she really say stop crying while you're eating that banana? I wonder, like, if that's what she really said in the original language, because we watched the dubbed version.
No, I'm pretty sure that is what the subtitle said when I saw it, yeah.
Interesting.
Mm.
Yeah, but overall, I don't really recommend it. I mean, I kind of lost interest. I kind of got bored. So, You know, I didn't think it was worth sitting through a second time around.
I enjoyed it. I seem to remember. But it was,
I would agree with Nathan. I thought it had a lot of good, you know, setup. But my problem was that every time they, you know, get to the point where they're going to show the creatures, they, you know, obfuscate it with a shaky camera work and just basically probably to hide the subpar effects. And I didn't really care about anyone in the film. And just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of went on and on.
Who I cared about was the dog. And the dog suffers through the whole movie. So that made me very angry. Mm-hmm. So the movie just made me angry, really.
Well, fair enough. What about you, Eric? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I liked it, I have to say. I didn't like... What? I didn't like the very last minute. There's sort of a coda to it that I didn't like, but I thought the rest of it was really good. It was like The Thing, kind of, or what kind of other movie? You know, those monster trapped in a house with monsters outside movies, like The Mist or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. One of those, like, it has an ending, and then they decide to end on a false ending, or like a, one of those, they should have done this endings, and it just kind of goes off. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
A lot like The Mist, yeah.
Yeah.
The Mist is awesome, as is The Thing.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Nathan. Another two, I believe you have for us. Okay.
Now we're going to get to the better stuff.
Okay.
I watched also with Grant, Lady in a Cage.
Is that Olivia de Havilland?
Yes.
Yes.
And that movie is brilliant. We both loved it. It's actually, I think it's well ahead of its time. It's, you know, it's pretty suspenseful. And James Caan is really, really good as the, you know, the villain of the gang that breaks in. For anybody that doesn't know this movie, it's, about, you know, Olivia de Havilland plays this woman who, you know, has an injury. I think she'd broken her hip or something. So there's a little elevator in her house. And due to a power outage, she gets stuck in that elevator between, you know, the first and second floor. And since she's trapped and there's nobody else at the house, this gang, you know, kind of breaks in and starts tormenting her and robbing the place. And, you know, I mean, basically just a lot of mental torture. So, I mean, it's actually really good and pretty tense in places. So I'd highly recommend it.
Excellent. Yes, I saw it a while back, and I think it's a great little movie.
I don't remember it. I need to watch it. I know I've seen it. I just don't remember it, but I want to see it again.
Honestly, Joseph, it kind of, in a lot of places, reminded me of The Sadist. So I think you'd like it.
Oh, okay.
What about you, Eric? Have you seen
it? No, I haven't seen it, no.
No, okay. It's worth a watch, definitely. And it's kind of part of the kind of older actress, Hollywood actress kind of horror thing, isn't it? The trope, but well, not trope, but the thing with like the Joan Crawford and Betty Davis and all of the Veronica Lake in Flesh Feast and all those kind of films and like Joan Crawford in Trog.
Yeah, like I said, I don't remember it. Is it color or black and white?
Black and white.
Mm. Okay.
Okay, and what was the last one you saw?
Oh, I went to the theater and watched No Good Deed. Have you guys seen previews for that one yet?
No.
Or the woman's...
No.
Idris Elba.
Yeah, okay. But in the previews, it's a woman who's home alone with her two children, and this guy who has basically broken out of prison shows up and starts tormenting her. And, you know, she's kind of having to fight, you know, against him throughout the night to survive. I actually thought this was going to be just a little fun, like, popcorn suspense movie, but it turned out to be one of the most hysterical films I've ever seen at the theater because it's just so bad.
Oh, really?
Yes, and I had a great time because, I mean, it was hysterical laughing through it because, I mean, it's a textbook example, in my opinion, of someone who makes every possible wrong decision that you can make in the situation she's in. I mean, the guy comes up to her house and he's bleeding. He's like, I've had a car accident. Can I use your phone? And, you know, it's a thunderstorm. And she's like, well, you know, you know, my husband will be home soon, but here, you can use my phone. So she hands him the phone, and then her daughter, like, makes a noise, and she just walks back into the kitchen and leaves the door hanging wide open. And she comes back, and she's like, you know what, why don't you come on inside and wait? So she invites the stranger inside that she has no clue who he is, and they talk for just a few minutes, and she goes, you know, I feel so silly. My husband's not coming home tonight. I mean, it's like every decision she decides to make is a horrible one. So, I mean, it just gets to the point where you stop really caring what happened to the people on screen and just enjoy the just ridiculousness of it all.
You know, Idris Elba really needs to find a new agent because he was so good as Stringer Bell on The Wire. But then he starts doing all these stupid movies like No Good Deed and Obsessed and the Prom Night remake. I mean, he really needs to find a new agent. Bad.
And the thing is, like him and the woman that, you know, plays the woman that's being stalked. I mean, they're both really good in the movie. It's just the writing is so bad.
Hmm.
I mean, I love there's a really great scene where her friend is kind of suspicious about him and chooses to confront him when they're both alone in a dark garage. It's like, oh, there's tons of weapons around here. Let me confront you here. So, I mean, I would recommend it if you like, you know, movies that are like so bad they're good. You know, if you're a fan of, you know, like Scream for Help, that movie from the 80s. If you're a fan of a movie like that, then you'd probably like No Good Deed.
Okay. Well,
Justin, isn't
like
Idris Elba in Luther,
yes,
that show you get over in England? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a classic thing he's doing. I mean, Luther's really good. It's a bit silly, but it's very good. I think they're going to do a movie version of it. But he was in, what was the Guillermo del Toro film?
Oh, Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was good in that as well. He's a good actor. He's very good actor. Kinda has a bad time choosing scripts.
And in No Good Deed, he actually is very intimidating in that movie. You know, I mean, because I kept thinking, man, if he was in like a serious, you know, suspense movie as the villain, he would be really, really good.
Well, he played Nelson Mandela, didn't he, in that film recently?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and he got really good reviews for that. But so, yeah, it's kind of slightly bizarre. But okay, well, thank you, Nathan. Before I just talk, I haven't actually got much to talk about what I've seen recently. But a couple of things I wanted to mention was obviously the Vinegar Syndrome Blu-rays of Graduation Day have now been released, and Vinegar Syndrome have kindly sent us copies so we can listen to ourselves talking about Graduation Day. I got my copies. Did you get yours, Eric?
No.
No?
No.
I haven't.
When did yours,
Eric?
When did yours arrive, Justin?
Oh, about 4 days ago.
Nope, mine hasn't arrived.
Oh. Oh, dear.
Did he send you extras, Justin?
I got two copies.
Yeah, okay, me too.
That's weird. I got four.
Oh, I wonder what that could be. But I'm sure yours will be on the way, Eric.
It better be.
I know. Otherwise, you don't want to mess with
Inga. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was great. So to see that out. And it's really nice to see most of the time, well, actually pretty much for this one, we got rave reviews in Fangoria and quite a lot of blogs saying how much they enjoyed the commentary we did for Graduation Day. Mm. So we definitely,
people are saying that our commentary was actually better than the official commentary.
Mm.
Well, because we gave, you know, I guess because we threw more love at the film, whereas the other one was just more straightforward, kind of just fact checking.
Yes.
And well, I had an incident on the beach in Spain. What I do is I stockpile video watchdogs because they're handy for bringing down to the beach because they're compact size. Mm. And I was reading one from probably this time last year, and it had a review of Death by Invitation, which was the very first commentary track we did for Vinegar Syndrome. And Tim Lucas did the review, and he absolutely slated us.
Yes.
Absolutely slated us. I sent you guys a photo of what he said, and it was not nice.
It was not nice. And we decided, I think he was being a bit unfair because it was very difficult to actually find any information on that movie, and we only actually did that movie because it was a double bill originally with Savage Water,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was the only reason, really, wasn't it? We did that film, so we struggled for stuff to talk about. We have really decided now only to do commentaries for films that kind of fall within the slasher genre.
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to stir up any kind of, you know, trouble or shit or anything, but you know, looking over that guy's itinerary, he seems to, you know, lavish a lot of love on, frankly, movies that are just plain shitty. And he takes him extremely seriously. Whereas we, you know, let's be honest with ourselves. Death by Invitation is not a good movie, but it's a fun movie. Yeah. I don't think we slated the movie when we showed it some affection, but
His review.
You can't
kind of said that. I mean, I just felt his review kind of made it sound like that we just all hated the movie and just wanted to rip it apart. When really, I mean, I kind of liked it, so I don't know where that came from.
But he also didn't listen to the whole commentary, did he?
No, he said he switched it off after a while, after some horse face comment or something, which I can only assume came from Joseph.
So, if that's the case, he switched it off after about 20 minutes.
So anyway, with the graduation day discs are out, so make sure you grab those. Also, just wanted to mention those talking about upcoming slasher movies. The Town That Dreaded Sundown is being remade, and that's being released relatively soon. I thought it was probably going to be pretty dreadful, and apparently it's going to be on the shelf for a little while. But I saw a blog from the BFI, the British Film Institute, and the person who'd written, presumably had seen a sneak preview of the film and said it's fantastic. So it'll be interesting to see actually how good it is. Do you know when it's being released in the States?
I'm not sure, but I did see the trailer, and I really liked the trailer. The only issue I took with the film is that the killer talks, so that kind of has me worried. I'm afraid he's just going to have all these like annoying soliloquies, but the movie itself actually looks really suspenseful, and the kind of updated look of the killer. I mean, he's basically the same, but I guess he's a little more leaner here. He looks really menacing. So,
It is a remake. It's not a sequel, because in the previews, I mean, it looked like they were talking about the murders that happened years ago, which would be the original movie.
Yeah, but the original movie is based on a real life case.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They're talking about the real life murders from the past. I think they're probably in the remake. They're probably just going to say it was, so many years ago.
Well, it was set. This is a it's set in the modern times, isn't it?
I think so. Mm. I wonder if they're going to either keep the trombone scene or if they're going to replace it with like a cello or something.
They have it. It's in the preview.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's really quick. I didn't see it either. Somebody told me it's at this point, so I just went there and I had to pause it, and you can see it.
Okay.
Right. Well, anyway, I just thought I'd mention that because that's kind of the upcoming slasher movie to look out for, hopefully. And as far as what I've been watching the last couple of weeks, there's nothing really kind of horrific. I saw the RoboCop remake, which was, I've forgotten it already. I did watch the Raid 2. The Indonesian sort of what we describe it, kind of fight movie, I kind of guess, or martial arts movie, directed by a Welshman, which was extremely violent and very entertaining. Has anyone seen that?
I saw the first film, which was excellent. I haven't seen the second one. I'm really looking forward to it, though. Mm.
The second one, I don't think, is as good as the first one, but it's got some. It kind of veers into more kind of Kill Bill territory, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But it's got like Hammer Girl, which is this kind of this woman who's an assassin who kills with hammers. Have you seen it, Eric?
No, I haven't seen either one yet, though. But I did see Judge Dredd, which I think apparently got a lot of comparisons to The Raid.
Oh yeah. Well, that's
I liked that one so.
Well, yeah. Dredd is the one you're talking about.
Dredd.
Stallone version.
Yeah. I think it's partly because it was the idea of going a siege on a, or kind of a
tower
battling
block,
their way up a tower block, more so, that, although it was like ultra-violent as well.
Justin, didn't you say that Dredd was excellent?
Yes.
Okay, I'm definitely going to watch that then.
Yeah, you should do, because it's
really good. Yeah.
It's really, really good. And they're talking, they're mooting about doing a prequel or a sequel to it, because it's one of those films. You know, films that don't always find an audience when they're released?
Then they find them later on. So.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what's happened with Dredd. It's kind of word of mouth is kind of, it didn't, because the trouble is the American box office makes or breaks a film in the eyes of the studios, understandably. And I think because Judge Dredd isn't really known apart from the Stallone movie, so much in, you know, United States, like 2000 AD is kind of is a standard, you know, comic that's been going since the 70s in Britain. So it didn't quite find the audience it deserved, but it's a fantastic movie. It's really, really good. And the 3D was out of this world. So if you get a chance to watch it in 3D, because I know you've got a 3D TV, haven't you, Nathan?
Yes.
Yeah. If you get a chance to watch Dread in 3D, then it's definitely worth doing. It's got some of the best 3D that I've ever seen.
Is stuff flying out of the screen?
I can't remember. It was kind of, there's a lot of depth, which I know you're not a fan of. But it's kind of, there probably is stuff flying out of the screen because there's lots of explosions and glass flying everywhere and bodies falling towards the camera and stuff like that. So probably, yeah.
Okay.
It's worth a watch. But yeah, so anyway, I saw The Raid 2 and that's kind of worth a watch. What was the other film I saw? Which I'd never seen before and it's not a horror movie. I'm not going to talk about it, but it's Forbidden Planet, which is from the 1950s sci-fi movie of Robbie the Robot. And, you know, sometimes those films you think you've seen and you're sure you would have seen them. And when you actually watch them, you realise you haven't seen them. And Forbidden Planet was one of those. And the only reason I bring it up is that it kind of had a few very minor, very kind of off to tangent, kind of slasher-esque things. Because it's an also alien... where the astronauts being stalked by this kind of invisible monster.
Isn't that the one with Leslie Nielsen?
Yes.
Oh yeah, I remember
very
that
young
one.
Leslie Nielsen. And of course, you know, it's set in a couple of centuries away from now, but they're all living in 1950s kind of looking sci-fi home on this remote planet somewhere. But yeah, it was a fun film. I enjoyed it. It was good. It's just I was surprised I'd never actually seen it before. But yes, so anyway, that is that. So I think it's probably time we head over to Italy via Austria. I was thinking of doing The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward first, unless there's any objections.
No.
Before That's we get fine. To the cheese of the matter, because we can have a cheese board after this one. But here, there is a good trailer for this, but it's in Italian and it's mostly music, so it's just lots of, and like la 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 la. So here's some dialogue instead to get you in the mood for The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward.
This melodrama is really required.
Mrs. Ward, is this the man you spoke about?
Yes.
Meaning you believe that he is the razor killer we are hunting?
You silly girl. You're convinced that I'm the one who slit all those white throats.
Yes, you're capable of anything. He also has a black car, just like the one they reported nearby the scene of each crime.
You are ravishing today.
But I know you wrote the messages in those bouquets.
Bouquets?
The lady and I, Commissioner, had been on somewhat intimate terms until she married another man, so now I send flowers, hoping that roses and poetry may make her recall the happy times.
I loathe you.
The only thing I cannot bear is indifference. Your best emotion is violent, raging hatred. Love is nothing compared to that.
Scream Queen Edwige Fenech stars in this violent masterpiece, the first giallo film directed by Sergio Martino. Fenech portrays Julie Ward, a restless woman embroiled in a horrifying mystery that threatens to drive her to the brink of madness or worse. Which of the men in her life is the vicious serial killer, and will Julie become his next victim? Erotic, stylish, and at times excessive, The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward remains one of the most celebrated and influential giallo of all time. So that was the back of the, part of the back of the No Shame release of The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward, which put out in the States in 2005. As I said, this was the first film the first giallo by Sergio Martino, and it was released in 1970, around about the same time as Dario Argento's Bird with a Crystal Plumage. Sergio Martino obviously went on to do a number of other giallo films, also with Edwige Fenech, but this is the first pairing with her and George Hilton, who was an Argentinian actor who became famous in Italy around this time. Actually, he was most famous for lots of westerns before this, before he came the king of the giallo, and Edwige Fenech became the queen of the giallo, and they went on to star in a number of films where they basically kind of recreated the role in the same way. But this is one of my favourite giallo films. I would go as far as to say this is probably, in my opinion, Sergio Martino's best giallo, although I do love Torso and, to a lesser degree, All the Colours of the Dark and Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key. He also did, fairly soon after this, A Case of the Scorpion's Tail, which again is relatively trashy and probably, is very enjoyable. But this is the film that I think kind of has it all, basically. What it doesn't have is an Italian kind of background. It's actually set in Austria, so it has a kind of chilly, it's not like a warm Latin blooded kind of film, but it does get some of that in it when it does a jaunt off to Spain, which apparently was only because I think it had Spanish producers or something to do with Spain. So they all went off to Sitges, which is where you were, Eric, wasn't it?
Not on this holiday, no, but I have been there in the past, yeah.
You have. Mm. And you weren't menaced with a harpoon gun, were you?
Well, there were lots of long, pointy things waving themselves in my direction, but not harpoons.
Okay, well, we shall see. So did any kind of strange men hand you notes in the street?
No, but strange men did come up to me asking me for drugs.
Okay.
Because apparently I have what are known as cow eyes, which is sort of large pupils, and it makes me look like I'm stoned all the time. So men were asking me for drugs a lot.
Okay. Yeah. So no wonder the tales of the Turkish prison. It was obviously if you... So I can see...
I'm not a junkie. It's just that my eyes apparently give me the impression...
No, well, you said it, Eric.
I'm not a junkie.
Inga in the remake of Midnight Express. I can see it now. well... I've got more to say about this film, but Eric, as you're now we're talking about your drug mule holiday, what are your thoughts on The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward?
Oh, I love it, and it's one of my favourites outside of the Argento canon. I mean, I'm quite traditional. I think Deep Red is my favourite giallo, but this is one of my favourites outside. It's maybe Torso more so. Oh, what a nice rhyme, Torso more so. I love the really stylish dream sequences in the film. There's a moment where Ivan Razumov smashes a bottle and the glass shatters in slow motion against this sort of pure black backdrop. Mm. And that's a moment that happens several times in The Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, which is that art house giallo that came out last year. So obviously this was a huge influence on them, I'd say. The film has this wonderfully twisty-turny plot. And, you know, just when you figure out who the culprit is, sort of another spanner is thrown into the works. And it's one of those gialli where for the first half you're kind of at a loss, not knowing how the various elements fit together. You know, there's a character comes in and is killed in the shower, and you're like, what's she got to do with the plot? And then it all comes together nicely in the end in a rather illogical and convoluted way. And as with a lot of sort of even slasher movies as well, you have to ask yourself, you know, from the culprit's point of view, surely there was an easier way to execute their plan. There must have been, you know, it's like snakes on a plane. It's like, surely there's something more efficient they can do. And there's some great fun moments in the film as well. I mean, it's not a trashy film by any means, but there's some fun moments, like the character of Carol, who keeps her knickers in the oven because she hates going out with cold underwear on. And there's also this out of the blue wrestling match at a party involving two girls who are wearing paper dresses. It's such a peculiar element that you can only find in the wonderful world of the giallo. Edwige Fenech is terrific as always. She travels on the eyeliner as only she can in a way that Justin could possibly rival, I'm thinking. Ivan Razumov is always sinister looking. I can't remember if he ever played a good guy in any movies, because he just looks like pure evil. And there's an element of sleaze to it as well that if I say I kind of enjoy it, makes me sound like a perv, but I don't. I mean, Edwige loves getting a ruddy good scene to in a bed of broken glass, which is kind of a perverse idea, you'll have to agree. My favourite horror quote horror scene in the movie is there's a terrific underground car park sequence that ratchets up the suspense, and I think it rivals anything that Martino managed to generate in Torso. So, I mean, despite its ludicrous elements, it gets away with them in the same way that you can overlook the silliness of something like Deep Red, which does have ridiculous moments. So it's a big thumbs up from me. Yeah, I'll have to say it's my second favorite Martino movie after Torso. I also like the score as well, especially during the dream sequences. It's very 70s and kind of ethereal, and because sometimes the score in Giallos can be quite cheesy in a fun way, but I think this one is quite apt and, you know, in keeping with the tone of the movie. Yes, big thumbs up for The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Eric. Nathan, how about you? What are your thoughts? Is it the first time you've seen the film?
I had seen it a really long time ago, but I did not remember it. So this was rewatching it. Unfortunately, I'm not as big of a fan as you guys are of it. I mean, you guys already know that giallos are not really my forte in general. I love the classics. You know, I do love, like, you know, a lot of Argento stuff. I love Torso. You know, I love those classic ones. But my problem is for these other ones, I just find them so forgettable. You know, I mean, it's a good thing I took notes about this movie, or I probably would have already forgotten it. You know, I mean, like Eric said, though, I do love the wrestling match because I just thought that was hysterical. And I love the character of Carol. I mean, she was my favorite character in the movie. I mean, the poor girl, she's not very bright. I mean, the idea of going to meet this blackmailer in this park, you know, and just sit there waiting until it gets dark. No, there'll be none of that. But she decides to do it, unfortunately for her. But no, I loved her character because I was actually going to mention that if Eric didn't, that she likes to put like her knickers in the oven. Like, who does that? But I thought it was hysterical. So yeah, great character. Awesome character. As far as the movie itself goes, I actually thought it was all right. You know, I mean, I didn't think it was fantastic, but I didn't hate it. I just kind of thought it was middle of the road for me. But, you know, I mean, Edwige is great, you know, as usual. I mean, I always thought she was great in those movies. Thank you for that, Axel. And overall, you know, I'd probably give it maybe like I would As Above, So Below, like a 5 out of 10.
Controversial.
Harsh.
I didn't even think that was that harsh.
It's a classic. But Joseph, let's see if Joseph tips the balance or...
Well, I think with Sergio Martino is that he doesn't get a lot of credit for his cinematography, and I think the cinematography in The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward is just beyond excellent. I mean, it rivals anything, you know, Argento's ever done. That being said, I really did not like this movie at all, really. I'm sorry. I mean, I love the cinematography. I love the cinematography. That scene where, I guess it's a hedge maze. I don't really want to call it a maze, but where she runs into the gardener at the hedge things, and then she ends up getting killed. I really did like that scene. But my problem with this movie is I did not care about anyone, and it goes on and on with so many false endings. It's like, okay, here's the end of the film. Here's the reveal of the killer. Nope. Let's go on for 15 more minutes with these police inspectors trying to figure out who the murderer is. Oh, here he is. Here's who the killer is. Nope. Let's tack on another ending. I'm kind of like between sides here. It's like, I'd say Justin and Eric are more of the, giallo aficionados, and Nathan's more of the slasher aficionados. I mean, we all love slasher films, but I'm kind of like in the middle of the road where I love gialli, don't get me wrong, but I'm kind of picky about them. You know, I love Torso, I love Deep Red, Opera, Tenebrae, a lot of those films, but this one just really did nothing for me. I mean, you know, like I said, I just think it plods. It's way too long. There's too many false endings. I couldn't really keep track of anything, and, you know, I didn't really take a lot of notes, so I've already forgotten a lot of it. I mean, aside from the cinematography and that scene in the hedge maze, and I did like the oven bit. I thought that was funny, and the wrestling match was funny, but I don't know. This movie's just really not for me, so thumbs down. Sorry.
Well, ooh. I think it shows a big split between what... A big split between the Europeans and the Americans on this one, doesn't it?
Yes.
Don't you think, Eric?
I do. I think that's what it is exactly. It's an anti-European bias from our American friends.
Hey, I just said I like a lot of European.
And I will sing Torso's praises for the rest of my life because that movie's amazing.
Yeah, let me just reiterate here. I think Torso is miles better than this film in every conceivable way. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Oh, you know, like I agree.
Like I said, I think the cinematography here is just phenomenal, but the movie itself, the plot is just so plodding. I just could not get into it. And I'm not one of those people who, you know, checks their phone when I'm watching a movie, but this is a movie where, you know, I had to pause a few times just to kind of build up the energy to finish it. Maybe I was in a bad mood, I don't know, but it just did nothing for me.
Okay, well, it's interesting because I thought it was quite gripping all the way through. I thought it was, but it's horses for courses, isn't it? Different people find things in different ways. I mean, I loved the convoluted ending. I thought we weren't necessarily spoil it here. Are we going to spoil it here, or what do we think?
Well, I can't really remember, but my impression was that basically, I honestly don't remember who the actual real murderer was, but my understanding is that basically people were using another killer as a way to get to her inheritance money. Am I on the right track here? Or?
Well, basically, if you haven't seen this film, you want to maybe skip ahead 5 minutes. But it was the Hitchcock references were obviously with the Psycho, with the shower murder, which Sergio Martino acknowledges. But essentially, it was a riff on Strangers on a Train, which, you know, the Hitchcock film where the two strangers meet and decide to murder each other's wives or people in their lives. So it's a similar thing with this, except you had another person in there. And it was, I'm still not entirely sure, but essentially it turned out that George Hilton, who has a very unconvincing Irish accent, or dubbed with an Irish accent in this, is basically working with Edwige Fenech's husband, and Edwige Fenech's husband murdered Carol in the park. I don't know whether he's supposed to be, because it obviously was supposed to be Edwige, but anyway, George Hilton was going to murder someone else, and it was to do with the inheritance money, but Ivan Razumov was Judy Ward's ex-lover, that she was in a sadomasochistic relationship, because there's throwaway comments about her having a fetish about blood and enjoying rape. So very 70s kind of politics, sexual politics, kind of very much not of the time now. But Ivan Razumov gets shot dead at the end after George Hilton and the husband think that Edwige had died, because there's a great scene, which I thought was great, when they put her in a locked room with gas and turn the gas on and then put an ice cube under the latch. So when it melts, it disappears, and the latch falls over, looks like she's locked herself in and committed suicide. But it turns out that she got away. And there's I love the scene at the end when they're driving along and she's just stood in the road, which is a very bizarre thing if you think about a police protection style thing, isn't it? It's kind of a very bizarre ending to put the person who they've tried to kill by the side of the road, just in the hope that they'll see her and then drive off into a river.
I know, I couldn't understand what they thought was going to happen with that plan.
No. And couldn't they have like saw her in advance and gotten freaked out and ran her over?
Like, well, exactly, that's what I thought. That's what was really bizarre. But anyway, they end up in the river, both dead, and then Julie is left on her own, presumably with all her money. And a couple of
who
other
murdered the woman in the shower.
Who that was the slasher who's going around in the background. Another killer.
And we never know who that is?
Well, it's some dude, but they're just cashing in on his murder spree.
That's what I pretty much gleaned from the film, that they're using him to kind of cover their tracks just so they can get to, you know, her.
Well, there's the air stewardess,
so convoluted.
Yeah.
But that's part of the joy of the genre, yes. I think so. But a couple of things. I thought Edwige Fenech was great in this, but her clothes are really ugly, weren't they, in this? Ended up wearing the really horrible clothes, because most of the time in these films she's wearing these fantastic 70s fashions, but she's kind of dressed up in some, like, god-awful Laura Ashley things throughout. what was the other things I noticed in this? But the underground car park scene, they kind of recreated that in Massimo Dallamano's, I think it is, What Have They Done to Your Daughters, which is that kind of Polizia Giallo hybrid from 1974. But it also, I do wonder, like with that film, whether or not the makers of Happy Birthday to Me saw it, because it's similar to the beginning of Happy Birthday to Me with Leslie Donaldson when she's harassed, well, killed in the underground car park at the beginning of that film. It also, a film we have covered before on the podcast, The Case of the Bloody Iris, which wasn't directed by Sergio Martino, but did reunite again Edwige Fenech and George Hilton. But that had a similar character, didn't it, to Carol, but even zanier. Do you remember the one who pretended to be dead under the bubble bath?
Oh, yes.
Jumped up and said, I'm a ghost.
Yeah.
So so they're obviously trying to recreate the vibe with this. But, I mean, that's everything I've got as far as this. I've got some backgrounds. Do you want to get onto a bit of background?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got another film to cover, haven't we? And some feedback as well coming up. Mm-hmm. So who would like to go first? Does anyone?
I have a couple of things.
Okay.
Apparently the letter H was added to the name Ward. Basically, some Italian woman named Miss Ward threatened legal action over the original title because she felt that it might damage her good name. This was just before the film was released. I don't know how true that is. I read that on Wikipedia. Of course, the film is also known as Next, or The Next Victim, and Blade of the Ripper. I actually saw this under the Blade of the Ripper title many, many years ago. I rented it from a local video store that's obviously now gone out of business. But I remember seeing the box art and the title, Blade of the Ripper, and I was like, ooh. So I rented it, and I obviously didn't really remember much about it because by the time we got to it, when I started to watch The Strange Vice of Miss Ward, I didn't realize it was the same movie. But that's pretty much all I have.
Okay. Right. Nathan, how about you? Hello?
Nathan? Nathan is gone.
No.
No. Okay.
Sorry, right, I was dealing with a dog who's going nuts.
It's just the delayed. No.
No. Well, it was worth it. It was worth it. But mm-hmm. Thank you, Nathan. Eric, how about you?
Okay, well, this is one thing that I thought Joseph might pick up on. The name of the actress who is killed in the shower, she's one of the minor characters in the film, she just goes by one name, and that name is Poochie, which I thought Joseph would like.
I didn't.
A Simpsons didn't, reference there.
I have to go now. My planet needs me.
Mm. I was looking through the sort of IMDb listings of the various people involved and what they went on to do. There's a brilliantly titled 1981 sex comedy that Sergio Martino had made with Edwige Fenech, and it's called Cream Horn, which sounds like something we'd all enjoy. No?
Well, it depends.
You're talking about the pastries from the grocery store, then maybe.
Yes, maybe, yeah. Christina Eroldi, who plays Carol, I think her real name is Conchita Eroldi. She was also in Torso, where she plays another character called Carol. But she went on to be a successful producer afterwards. Her credits include Michele Soavi's Cemetery Man, or Della Morte, Della More, whichever one you're looking at. I don't really have anything else. Oh, apart from that, I found a quote on, I think it was on IMDb, from Sergio Martino, where he says, my movies are like a soft drink, sparkling, unaffected products from mass consumption. A soft drink doesn't have the prestige of champagne, of course, but I'd rather have a good soda pop than watered down wine anytime. So he's quite aware he was making sort of popcorn entertainment, although I do think is the Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward is quite highbrow in terms of the giallo. I know that sort of when he went into the 80s and was making things like 2019 After the Fall of New York, which is a favorite post-apocalyptic movie of mine, that it was, you know, he was making kind of trashy, you know, popcorn movies at that stage. But I do think that this one is pretty highbrow. I don't really have anything else apart from, I think we've mentioned them already, that it was partially filmed in Sitges in Spain. George Hilton is from, I think you said he's from Argentina. Is he from Uruguay?
Oh, maybe, yes.
Yeah,
he was.
I think he's from Montevideo. Yeah. And of course, he's in loads of other, you know, he's in Case of the Scorpion's Tail, My Dear Killer, All the Colors of the Dark, Case of the Bloody Iris, some of which we've covered. I think that's all I have, Justin. So over to you.
Okay, thank you. Hopefully, the sound issues, my Mac is being really, really annoying and doing some kind of annoying update in the background, which is keeps on freezing it periodically. So
is it downloading the new U2 album for you?
No, well, it's hopefully taking it off and destroying it. But yeah, so hopefully it hasn't created any sound issues. But if it has, then apologies for that. And hopefully it's stopped being annoying, because it doesn't usually do this. It's just being a whiny little bitch. So anyway,
I haven't heard anything on your.
No, but I think it's different. It's not Skype. It's GarageBand is kind of it's freezing and then catching up. It's stopping and then catching up with itself. But hopefully that isn't creating warp.
So when we listen back, it'd be like, well, the what I thought, and then that.
Yeah,
that's what's
going to
sound like. Yeah.
It'll be. It won't be like. I don't know if I've still got that sound clip from.
It's going to be a classic.
Excellent.
So yes, it's going to be a classic episode.
That was our crinoline head episode.
I think it was, wasn't it? Yes.
And what the perfect time for it to mess up like that.
Absolutely, mind you, in that episode, you know, it was a embarrassment of riches, really, wasn't it? But
it happened to Justin a lot, and it was really funny because Justin was getting more and more frustrated every time it happened. Because I listened to that episode again not too long ago, and like at one point it happens, and Justin says something like, "Oh, good God!"
There's one point where Justin was like, he said something like, "I once." Then we all just laughed.
Yeah, that's. I've been known to make that sound before. But carrying back onto this, I've got a few bits. The film was actually refused a cinema certificate in the UK in 1971. Interestingly, I thought, it from Variety, when it said that Edwige Fenech was going to be appearing in perhaps another Giallo, but it was Silvio Amadio's The Spider's Game, which sounds like a Giallo, doesn't it? Mm. To be shot in Venice in September of 1970. And I had a look at that director's biography, his film credits, and there was nothing with Edwige Fenech. So unless it went on to be something else, he did direct the Giallo Smile Before Death in 1972. But without Edwige Fenech. So basically, there could have been a lost, not, it probably was never made, but a proposed Giallo that Edwige didn't appear in, unless it was The Spider's Game was about her cream horn, which it may well have been. So.
Something about Edwige Fenech, you know, I always thought she was very, you know, beautiful, but I don't know if it's Italian genes or not, but. You know, she's like pushing 65 now, and she still looks amazing, especially for her age.
Well, I think she's actually French.
Yeah,
she's French.
Oh, is she?
Tunisian. Yeah, French Tunisian.
Well, whatever she's doing something right, because she still looks amazing. Just throwing that in there. Sorry.
Yes. MILF. No. Good. MILF or GILF now probably.
Yeah.
The. It looks like the film did pretty well because in 1971, Variety said that Strange Fighter Mrs. Ward had considerable box office success here. Not sure if that's talking about America, because obviously, as Joseph said, it got released as next to American screens, a kind of grindhouse screens. And a lot of the Giallo that were released in the early 70s did get American releases, including films like, obviously, Eyeball, the Argento, early Argento movies. Which that's why Martino went on to do The Scorpion's Tale plus Torso and the other films we've spoken about. Let's have a look. We'd talked about the case of the Bloody Iris. That was also written by Gastaldi, who scripted this, which is perhaps why there were so similarities. With that, Edwige Fenech was in a relationship with Luciano Martino, who was the producer of this film. So that was Sergio's brother. Luciano Martino made an earlier giallo called The Sweet Body of Deborah with Carol Baker. And they could see, and that was in the late 60s, and they could see the potential, box office potential of these films. But the reason they made this film with then pretty much unknown actors and actresses or people who hadn't been proven in the genre, although Edwige Fenech had been in the Maria Bava film, which one is it?
$5 for an August Moon.
That's the one, yes. The year before, I think, or the same year. Because they wanted to make a film without spending huge amounts of money on known actors and actresses, because Carol Baker was in Baby Doll, and you know she's quite well known, and she did make quite a lot of giallo in Italy. She's kind of like typical American actress coming over, thinking no one would see them back home. But that's why they made this with these people, and then created essentially the king and queen of the giallo. One thing they do talk about in the extras of the No Shame, quite a lot actually, is about whether or not there was a homosexual subtext in the film, and whether or not George Hilton and the Ivan Rasimov's characters were in a gay relationship, and whether it's actually a gay menage a trois. And they were all of the. If you ever see the film, the extras are quite good. They all talk about whether or not there was actually a gay subtext. And they never quite get to the bottom of it, as it were. Edwige Fenech and Ivan Rasimov also appear in the Martino-directed and Gastaldi-scripted Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only Have the Key, which I think apparently takes its lengthy title from one of the messages in this film sent from Jean to Julie. One of the things I did notice, actually, which I thought was quite interesting, was actually I started to watch the film with the English subtitles on, which are completely different to the English dub in a lot of ways. Mm. It seems to be quite common. It's almost like people who kind of did the English dub just made it up as they went along, because there's quite a lot of nuances that are different, but actually factual things are different as well, which I thought was quite interesting.
Like what I did notice was I read that bit of trivia that one of the notes is roughly says Your Vice is a Locked Room and only I have the key, but I didn't spot that. Like the subtitles on the No Shame DVD don't give that away at any stage. Or did you spot it somewhere?
No, I didn't. It's only I read it in the trivia, and I wonder actually if, because what on the No Shame thing, it kind of, when they show a note, the music stops, doesn't it? So there's some kind of weird kind of insertion shot going on in there. So, yeah. Well, we'll get on to the French sex murders in a minute. The other thing was that the murder of Carol in the park was looks like it was ripped off by Dario Argento in Four Flies and Grey Velvet, when he did a very similar scene 11 months after Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward was released.
Is that the one where she's in the hedge maze?
Yes.
Or the hedges? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. The music was by Nora Landi, who was one of the kind of, I think, did the music for Cannibal Holocaust, actually, most famously. But yes, fantastic soundtrack, and it was used in Kill Bill Volume 2 as well. Some of the music. So I think. Oh, the last thing, and this Eric will like this.
Yeah.
There was... What? No.
No, I'm intrigued. Film.
No, okay. Did you know the film was remade in Turkey?
No. Oh.
And it was a Turkish giallo. Thirsty for Love, Sex and Murder was basically a shot-for-shot remake of this film. And it says, I just got like a little thing, it says, it stretches out to an almost pure cinematic abstraction, devoid of suspense. It certainly offers a good dose of sleaze and bloody violence towards women. The film is so crazy and wonderfully odd that it's hard not to like this piece of utter delirium. There's some difference between this film and its inspiration, as the plot is simplified and the ending is different. He said it's surely... I haven't seen it yet, but he said it made me laugh a lot. 8 out of 10 for sheer weirdness. So if you are a fan of this movie, there is... there's Turkish E.T. and Turkish Exorcist. There's also the Turkish Your Vice is Locked... No...
Strange Vice and Mrs. Ward.
Mrs. Ward. Yeah.
So, Justin, have you seen the Turkish Rambo?
No, but
one's funny. Look that up on YouTube, because it's hilarious.
I think I've seen bits of it, actually. But, yeah.
So, he has a rocket launcher, and it's obviously made of rubber, and it's on a string when he goes in to rescue hostages.
Right.
Yeah, it's good.
That sounds good. I did like the Turkish Star Wars. It was quite good fun. But, yeah. So, is there anything left to say about The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward, or shall we head to Paris for a bit of sex and murder?
I think that's all from me, at least.
Yeah. Okay. I'm in the mood for some sex and murder.
Okay. Well, here is an English language trailer for the French sex murders.
It all began the last night of Carnival.
Hurry up, Francine. They're waiting for you.
Okay, I'm coming.
No. Don't go. You promised.
Next time, Rudy's had everything.
Antoine Godvalis, you've been tried and judged by your peers. For the murder of Francine Boulaire, the court has found you guilty.
No. No, I didn't kill her.
Inspector, that's exactly the way we found her.
Mistral, get her off to the morgue.
Yes, sir.
The court condemns you to death by the guillotine.
You'll find out I'm not guilty.
Silence!
No, I'm not the murderer. One of you killed her. You're happy to let me pay for your crime. From the grave, I'll come back. And I promise to repay all of you.
You scoffed at Gottvalis' curse. The murder of Madame Colette makes one think, George.
Poppycock.
Why Tessier was murdered.
To make Godfather's prediction come true.
Then according to that, Professor, there's still Pepe and Marianne on the list.
And you, Randall, you're on a list. That is, if we're to believe the curse of Antoine's and the possibility of taking revenge post-mortem.
Is I'm frightened. I was close to Pepe, and I don't know why he was killed.
What about Antoine's curse?
I don't believe in that, and I know you don't. It is strange. Everyone that's been involved with him has been killed.
This gory sex thriller stars a galaxy of Eurocult acting talent: Anita Ekberg, Howard Vernon, Rosabelle Neri, not to mention hunky Gordon Mitchell, sexy Barbara Boucher, and glamorous Evelyn Kraft. Oh, and a professional Humphrey Bogart lookalike, Robert Saatchi. To match its sparkling cast, the film boasts a suitably wild plot. It features hooded killers, mad scientists, an eyeball thief, and some of the sleaziest murders seen in a long time. Set in and around a Paris brothel, the action is hot and as steamy as you could wish for. That's from the Mondo Macabro DVD, which came out in, again, I think it was in 2005. And I've got a quote on the front cover, which says, "This 1972 giallo is a riot from beginning to end, groovy." Which is a quote from my review on Hysteria Lives. This is as a counterbalance to the not too cheesy, or not cheesy at all, really, Sergio Martino's The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward. This is really kind of about as cheesy as you get with a giallo. Possibly not quite as over the top and bizarre as Eyeball, but it's kind of it's slightly tongue in cheek. Very, very exploitative in so much there's lots of sex, as obviously the title says, lots of nudity, and you even see a penis as well, which is a rarity in these films, because you see lots of boobies, and say in Slaughter Hotel, you see gusset typing and things like that, but you very rarely saw a penis, apart from the insertion scenes, for, you know, want a better word, because quite often when these films were released to the American market and also to the re-released at the Italian market, they would had porno inserts. And certainly films like So Sweet, So Dead was released in the US as penetration with hardcore inserts. Now, I don't know if this film ever had that, but certainly the sex in some scenes is close to hardcore. It's maybe not as kind of over the top, almost as close to hardcore as something like The Sister of Ursula, which Mr. Creeperson and his cohorts on Giallo Ciao Ciao podcast, which is the All Giallo podcast, which if you are a fan of Giallo, you should definitely be following them and listening with Phantom Eric and Chris. They talked about the Sister of Ursula, which I've not seen, but that's kind of lots of sex. It's got rimming and Death by Dildo.
I've seen Sister of Ursula. I don't remember there being rimming.
Well, I saw a photo, and there's some man with his tongue up a lady's bottom. So unless he's, I don't know, hunting for truffles,
he might be.
Who knows? But anyway, back to the French sex murders. It's exploitative in the best possible way, and it's incredibly cheesy. And it probably doesn't take itself too seriously. It's kind of a cavalcade of outrageous action, outrageous dialogue, and outrageous acting, which I really enjoy. I do like my, you know, classy Giallos, but it's no secret that I'm also a big fan of the trashier version. And again, actually, I forgot to mention, watched Eyeball yet again on Friday night, which must be the 495th time that I've seen that movie. And I introduced a couple of people to it who enjoyed it very much as well. So I'm curious to find out what we think. So to bookend it, I'm not going to come to Eric first, but I'm interested if Nathan, I've got a feeling you might have enjoyed this more. Is this more up your street than the Strange Vices of Mrs. Ward?
It's weird because I actually think I preferred Mrs. Ward.
Oh,
to be honest, as surprising
I'm surprised.
As it is. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I rewatched this again because I'd watched it a little while ago, and so I rewatched it again actually this morning before we even started the podcast. And I will say, like, this is one of those movies, like, at some points the acting is overwrought, which was hysterical. I love the cheesy death scenes, especially the fact that they have to switch the colors and they repeat them. You guys know what I'm talking about. You know, it'll like show like the killer swinging the lamp down on the woman, and it'll just keep showing that like four or five times with different colors. So I love that. I thought that was a lot of fun. I loved the body count. The body count was awesome in this movie. So, I mean, I give it that. You know, it's a great body count. And I really liked the motorcycle scene where, you know, he's trying to get away from the police and he ends up accidentally decapitating himself. And the look on that decapitated head when it hits the ground, it just has this look like, oh, this could only happen to me. You know, just kind of has that look on his face.
Yeah, they leave on that. That's funny.
Unfortunately, really my main complaint with this movie is I didn't really find the police investigation all that interesting. I wanted to get back to the cheesiness of it all. Like I just, anytime it was dealing with, you know, an investigation, I was like, let's get back to the fun stuff. And I love the fall from the Eiffel Tower. I mean, that was just ridiculous. And the police detective, I love at the end when the fall happens, he just lights up a cigarette, you know, all in a day's work. But anyway, I mean, maybe I did like it a little bit better than Mrs. Ward now that in hindsight, you know, just because I keep thinking of all the stuff I liked about it. So, yeah, I probably actually, you know, for technically being a technically well-made written film, I would probably put Mrs. Ward above this. But for sheer just entertainment and just outlandishness, I would rate The French Sex Murders higher.
Well, because I was thinking the reason I thought you might like it more is kind of not exactly as unique as something like Crazy Fat Ethel, but it's Dick Randall, who obviously had a finger in many pies, including Slaughter High. A number of other trash-tastic films. He's actually in the film. He's the guy with the big cigar who gets interviewed by the police after the murder of Francine. But I thought, because it seemed to be more in line with some of the, as I say, unique type of film that Nathan champions.
I will say that, you know, like I said, the police investigation parts, you know, kind of drag for me, but I think the rest of the movie makes up for that.
Okay, well, thank you. Joseph, how about you?
Yeah, this would definitely be more up my alley because, you know, whereas I found Mrs. Ward very convoluted and just kind of plotting, I liked the just the bizarro, bonkers nature of this one because they basically throw in everything but the kitchen sink. They actually probably do throw in the kitchen sink at some point. I like the Humphrey Bogart impersonator. I think that's kind of unique. I also like, you know, like Nathan said, they show the same scenes over with different color palettes. I like that. I think that's amusing. The fall from the Eiffel Tower with the superimposed, like I think they want you to make it look like it's a human, but it's like a blotch because it's so quickly. I found that kind of funny. I don't know. I just found this one just so, you know, out there and a lot more entertaining, whereas the other one I just kind of had to, you know, pause. You know, I was laying in bed watching it, and then I'd pause. I'd get up to go to the bathroom, and then I'd kind of get distracted, and I'd, you know, go for a drive, and I'd have to come back and just kind of finish it. Well, this one, I just kind of got through it in kind of one fell swoop. So, you know, whereas the last one, I didn't recommend that. I do recommend this one. So, yeah, a recommendation. So, there you go.
Excellent. Eric, how about you?
Well, I love this film, I have to say. I thought you've picked a perfect double bill for me, anyway, on this episode. It's not quite as silly as Eyeball, as you said, but it gets close enough that it's just bloody entertaining. And as everyone has said, it starts off with that scene on the Eiffel Tower where the sort of cardboard cutout silhouette is seen falling towards the camera with that sound effect on it. It's just such a surreal and phony effect that it just makes me fall in love with the film from the get-go. As you said, it's full of sleaze and nudity and bums and willies. You know, it's kind of a checklist for exploitation fans. It's quite gory, certainly far more gory than The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward. You've got two decapitations in there. One pretty spectacular omen type decapitation, as Nathan was referring to earlier. Possibly too many characters in the film, I'm thinking, because this is kind of a minor spoiler. When it gets to the end of the movie, we realize that Roger and Eleanor are sort of the two people who are integral to the plot, and it just, up until the final moments, it doesn't seem that way. They don't feel sort of central to the story all the way through it, which is kind of weird, but that's just me nitpicking, looking for, you know, possible flaws. Well, there are tons of flaws in the movie, let's be honest about it, but they're good ones. It's vastly entertaining with, you know, all these huge absurd plot moments, such as the professor's obsession with the initial culprit's severed head and the severed head's apparently moving eyes or the iris that dilates, a plot point that places the film into the supernatural, but then, you know, sort of goes nowhere. There's no real resolution to that. It's like we never understand why, you know, one of the non-mad characters says that he's seen the eyes and the severed head move, but it never resolves that plot thread, which is kind of weird, I thought. There's also, apart from showing some sequences with different sort of coloured filters over them, you also get one sequence which is shown in negative, which I know doesn't happen in all prints of the movie, but the one I was watching, it does, the courtroom scene, which is an oddly artistic flourish for a film that's kind of like, as we said, along the same lines as Eyeball or Strip Nude for Your Killer. I loved the... did anyone notice how ineffective the police checkpoint was when Antoine was trying to escape on the motorcycle? It's like they were like 15 Kenneth Williams trying to stop him, you know? They were just so ineffective. It's like, oh, let me see your identification. And he just drives off and they're like, oh, like mincing around going, oh, what do we do? And there's a great scene as well where Marianne goes to visit Tina and Tina's there with her boyfriend, Randall. And she talks to her for maybe like 45 seconds or a minute or something. And then Randall says, Randall takes her takes Tina into the bedroom and shags while Marianne is just sitting on their couch having a glass of brandy. It's just such a bizarre idea. But overall, a thumbs up from me. If you've no tolerance for silliness, you probably should avoid it. And if you have an aversion to cardboard cutouts falling off the Eiffel Tower, then probably give it a miss. But I thought it was great. It's certainly up there with Eyeball and Strip Nude for Your Killer in the cheesy Jallo stakes for me. And I'm surprised Nathan didn't enjoy it more, to be honest.
Well, I mean, the other things to mention, obviously, is the film had alternative titles. And one of them was The Bogeyman and The French Murders.
Yeah, because within the film itself, there's no reference made to his... to him looking like Humphrey Bogart, is there?
No, which is is curious. He's not the best actor in the world, and I think this is maybe why he's got a bit. It's a bit of a one note kind of performance, isn't it? So he looks incredibly like Humphrey Bogart, but there's nobody says, "Hey, you look like Humphrey Bogart," and there's no. It's just like if you can imagine Humphrey Bogart being teleported from a film with Lauren Bacall. In the 1940s, you know, suddenly appearing in an Italian giallo, it's kind of just like that. They've just dumped in this character who's pretending to be Humphrey Bogart. So it's quite curious, but he hasn't got the charm or whatever Humphrey Bogart had, really. He just looks like him. So he's not the best actor in the world. But I thought, I really enjoyed this film. I thought it was really good fun. I mean, it's a shame, Barbara Boucher is not in it more, because she plays Francine, who's a prostitute who gets murdered, the first murder, her kind of off on and off lover, who I think it was Antoine, who's the one you see his Winkle, he kind of beats her up in a scene that you could only really get in the early 70s giallo or early 70s Italian cinema, where protracted scene of him slapping her around
and calling her a whore, which she is, but
it goes on and on, and it's kind of, it's a bit uncomfortable to watch. It kind of goes, but he's overacts so much, doesn't he, that character. He's literally gnashing his teeth, and because he's married to Rosabella Neri in the film, and he goes knocking on her door when he escapes. And the irony is, because he was sentenced to be have his head chopped off on the guillotine, obviously a very French execution. And of course, the irony is he does have his head chopped off. But it throws in that kind of weird supernatural angle, because throughout the film, you're led to believe potentially that Antoine has come back from the dead and is bumping off all these people. But... and again, if you don't want the film spoiled, then fast forward for a couple of minutes. But it turns out that, is it Howard Vernon? Yes, he, who has a very bizarre eyes. He was in lots of Jess Franco movies. He was in, I think he's in Faceless as well, which is the one with Carolyn Monroe, which we'll have a link to a little bit later, when we talk about what we're covering next time. But he... played, I think, the Dr. Orloff film, the Jess Franco's films, but he's got a very strange look. And basically, if you've seen any Jess Franco movies or any movies, you can tell pretty much who the killer is going to be, because it's got Howard Vernon in it. And it turns out that he's killing prostitutes because he's in love with his own daughter. And so basically, it's kind of this kind of weird incestuous kind of. Sort of angle, which kind of ends the film with a very distasteful but very cheesy kind of ending, and you have that kind of weird cyclical kind of story device, where in fact it's actually Howard Vernon falling off the Eiffel Tower, isn't it? Bizarrely.
A cardboard cutout of him.
Yes, a cardboard cutout of him. But that's when it's got that great line of dialogue when he says something along the lines of "You're psychopathological, you depraved, dirty pig." Which was
that was the quote on your website forever.
Yes. Yeah. Which I thought was fantastic. So I mean, it's got everything, really. It's kind of also it's got Anita Ekberg, who kind of was most famous for being Fellini's La Dolce Vita, as a kind of Italian, or no, she's Swedish, wasn't she? Kind of answer to, like, art house answer to Jane Mansfield and Marilyn Monroe and Mamie Van Doren, that kind of voluptuous blonde. And in this, she plays the madam of this French brothel, and she looks a bit like Divine, doesn't she? She's a bit dumpy. She's kind of.
I read that in your review in Hysteria Lives, and it's incredibly true. She does.
Yeah. so it's not probably her finest moment, but then she went on to make Killer Nun.
Yeah, which is her finest moment.
Which is her finest moment, which has got, not only has got Joe D'Alessandro, which is a bonus for any movie, but it's also got the scene when she takes out somebody's dentures and stamps them into the ground, which has to be one of the finest moments of trash cinema, dressed as a nun.
That sounds like something Divine would do, possibly in female.
It does sound like something Divine would do, definitely. I was trying to think, what have I got written down? Well, let's say it kind of meanders a bit towards the end. I think it's kind of like it's not particularly well put together movie, but there's enough kind of madness. If you like the cheesier end, as it were, of the giallo, then you will really, really like this film, I think, or find a lot in there to get out of it. So I was going to say, well, obviously, Anita Ekberg, who played Madame Colette, so she's a long way from La Dolce Vita, but it's got Rosabelle Neri, who was played Marianne in Slaughter Hotel, which I think was the year before this came out. She's also in Smile Before Death and the fantastic Lady Frankenstein as well. And in this, she gets she bends over and gets a huge chopper, doesn't she? In the form of an axe taking a head off.
I like how you always pause, like you're looking for some kind of innuendo to throw in there.
I just don't have to look. They just come naturally to me. The Pietro Martellanzo, who played Antoine, the very overacting Antoine, was also in Death Walks at Midnight the same year, which is another very trashy, fun giallo. Probably Barbara Boucher was in lots of giallo. She was in Don't Torture a Duckling, the Lucio Fulci movie, as well as she was in The Black Belly of the Tarantula, where she has a bottom massage, if you remember that, which I'm sure if that's your kind of thing, you probably will remember it. But bizarrely, Robert Sacchi, who played the Bogart lookalike, his biggest film, he was in Die Hard 2.
Yeah, as many times as I've seen that movie, apparently he played an engineer, but I've seen Die Hard 2 like a million times, but I've never noticed a Humphrey Bogart looking guy. And yeah. I just found that out. So I was like, oh, I didn't know he was in that.
But IMDb is not infallible, is it? As we know. So
if you look at his IMDb profile, every second entry in there is he's playing a Humphrey Bogart or Humphrey Bogart lookalike. It's he was in The Man with Bogart's Face in 1980. He played Bogey in an episode of Sledgehammer, Humphrey Bogart in Fantasy Island, Humphrey Bogart lookalike in Sybil, and a Bogart DJ in a film from 1999 called Blast from the Past. So he was kind of a one-trick pony, really.
Yes, yeah. So, actually, was he a one-trick pony? Because, Eric, we're going to play out...
Yes, a two-trick pony, I should say.
Yes, well, we'll get on to that. Yeah. Who's got to... Well, first of all, I shall start with Nathan. Have you got any background info on this film, Nathan? No, thank you. Joseph, how about you?
Just the Robert Sacchi... being in Die Hard 2, and apparently what was his name, the producer who did Slaughter High Pieces,
Dick Randall.
Yeah,
Dick Randall. Yeah,
and he also did Don't Open Till Christmas, and a lot of films. A lot of his acting credits are kind of uncredited. I wonder if there's a reason for that, like Party Guest and Don't Open Till Christmas, uncredited. And this, he was uncredited. He did some Emmanuel films, uncredited. He did The Mad Butcher, uncredited, as a police officer, all uncredited. So I guess he was more of a producer than he was an actor. So,
well, I think he was kind of the trash Hitchcock, because, you know, Hitchcock used to love, used to put himself as little cameos. And I think Dick Randall used to insert himself into various things, from what I hear, which I can't possibly repeat. But stories I've heard.
That cigar he has is like 9 foot long.
He's got a fez on as well, isn't he?
Yeah, in one scene, yeah.
It's just kind of bizarre, isn't it? You've got this kind of brothel, but everyone's wearing these kind of ceremonial robes. It's all very confusing. Mm. And also, I didn't understand how, when you actually find out that Howard Vernon was the killer, And he had quite a battle with Barbara Boucher, didn't he? And he was shouting and no one heard anything.
Mm.
But anyway.
Will you ever shut up? Will you ever shut up?
So, okay, well, Eric.
Yes, I have a few bits and pieces. As you say, Dick Randall was a producer. He had a cameo in the movie, but he was also one of the writers under the pseudonym Robert Oliver. The film is also known in various territories as Murder in Paris, The Call Girls Meet Inspector Bogart, Paris Sex Murders, and The Return of Inspector Bogart. The editor was Bruno Mattei. Or Mate, I'm not sure how to pronounce his surname, but he later, of course, went on to direct the classics Hell of the Living Dead and Rats, Night of Terror. Let's see, what else do we have here? You've mentioned Renato Romano, who plays Randall, was also in Iguana with the Tongue of Fire, which was shot here in Dublin, Seven Bloodstained Orchids, and Death Laid an Egg, which is one of the most peculiar of Giallo. Special effects were by Carlo Rambaldi. Now, sometimes they aren't terribly special in this film, but he went. He worked on some other giallos.
Special in a different way.
Yeah, he worked on some other giallos like Deep Red, Lizard in a Woman's Skin, Bay of Blood, which is probably more of a slasher. But he went on to make it big in films like E.T. and Alien and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So he had the last laugh. We may laugh at some of his Bloody Moon style decapitation effects, but he had the last laugh. And Robert Sacchi, as you were saying, was a two-trick pony. He's, of course, the Humphrey Bogart lookalike, and he released a single in 1982 called Jungle Queen. I had a listen to it. It's on YouTube. It has a very heavy slap bass line, not dissimilar sounding to Club Tropicana by Wham. And it has a sax solo that sounds really, really like something from Haircut 100. But what he does, his contribution to the track is that he raps, in inverted commas, with a Humphrey Bogart impression over the top of this beat. I don't know if we're going to get a chance to listen to some of that, are we, Justin? Did you take?
I'm going to play out the episode with it. So,
oh, cool.
So wait a minute, this guy, the Humphrey Bogart lookalike, actually raps?
He does. Well, he talks really more over the beat, and then some women come in and sing the chorus.
Wow, I really need to hear this.
Well, the thing is, it's actually kind of catchy.
Oh.
Don't tell anyone. No. I kind of like it. Okay. Is that tumbleweed I hear? Oh, my joke of the week.
Oh, go on then.
Did you know that the Queen of the Giallo was also the leader of a large coven? She was known as the Head Witch Fennec.
I have a joke of the week, actually.
Do you?
Yes. I just made it up, actually.
Go for it.
Did you know that the Oscars snubbed Sergio Martino?
No.
No.
They said his films weren't award worthy.
Oh, ouch. Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. I'm quite embarrassed for Joseph.
I'm mortified. I'll do the joke of the week like once every year, but I think I should leave it to Eric.
Yes. Well,
because I mean, whereas mine are just kind of on the fly and cringeworthy, Eric's are like premeditated and cringeworthy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nathan, are we going to get anything out of you in the future, do you think?
I could try to come up with a joke. I'm not good at it, though.
Well, no, neither are like Joseph or Eric.
Well,
but why don't you come up with one, Justin?
I might do.
Do you come up with one for our next episode?
Okay, I will.
We'll see how good you are.
Well, okay. Well, anyway, we'll gloss over that, shall we? The last thing.
Sorry, just one other thing. Barbara Boucher is a Bond girl. She was in. She played Moneypenny in the 1967 Bond spoof Casino Royale.
Not now, Moneypenny. You're embarrassing me.
And if you recognize Howard Vernon, he's in a lot of Jess Franco movies. He has a sort of very recognizable face. It's kind of almost Marty Feldman-ish or something. Not Corey. Yes. He's in Erotic Rites of Frankenstein and A Virgin Among the Living Dead. And he's in Jean Roland's Zombie Lake, which most people think is the most boring film ever made. But I think that's Forrest Gump.
Right, fair enough. The only other thing I've got to add, I think about everything, was the catchy music was done by Bruno Nicolai. worked with Ennio Morricone, but also, of course, provided the amazing soundtrack for Eyeball.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, so, that is the, in conclusion, that is our Giallo double bill. So, I hope you enjoyed it. Have we got anything left to say?
Or should
we move on to some feedback?
After watching both of these films, I think as I get older, I find that I like the more cheesier Giallo than I do the more serious ones. I think that's one of the reasons why I liked Slaughter Hotel so much and Eyeball. It's just because they're so out there. I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, fair enough. I think that's a completely understandable. Mm-hmm. And Nathan, have you got any closing words? It obviously wasn't your finest hour. Well, not your finest hour, but it wasn't your finest couple of hours or for you watching.
I will say this. Both of those movies are miles ahead of the last film we covered.
Oh.
Yes, I would say that as well.
Mm. Okay.
Are you talking about Silent Rage?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know if I'd agree with Ward, but I would agree with the French one. So.
Okay, well.
The French sexy one.
The French sexy one, yes. If you're listening, of course you're listening, but as you're listening, if you agree or disagree, what do you think? Would you like to see us covering more Giallo, or have you had enough of the Italian flavour, as it were, whatever, I don't know what that means. But if you want to tell us, get in contact with the show this way.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
And indeed you can. So please drop us a line. But we do have some feedback this time, don't we?
We do.
We do. Mm-hmm. So has everyone got one?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, who would like to go first?
I'll go.
Okay.
Okay, this is from David Helvering. And he says, "Hey, guys, I liked the quizzes. The only problem I had with them was that some of the questions were too difficult. I would have liked more plot-related questions or questions that asked how a particular character died. But overall, I really did like the quizzes. I would like to see more," or "I'd like to hear more," I guess he means. "But I also like the top threes. I'd like to hear you guys discuss your most loved conventions of the subgenre, as well as maybe your most disliked conventions. I'd really like to know specifically what it is about the slasher film genre that each of you love so much." I think after 87 episodes, I think you should have a pretty clear idea of that. But anyway, he says, "This could be a top three, a combined list that you've all compiled and voted on, the order, or just an extemporaneous discussion. Thanks and keep up the good work, David Helvering."
Well, thank you, David. Mm-hmm. I kind of guess, I think, maybe when we get to one of our anniversary shows, maybe we should do something like that, bring it all together, shouldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I agree with him about
the quizzes.
I like the quizzes, too, just mainly because I like Eric to lose his shit.
See, I think that he's right, though. If we come up with a quiz, I think it's a good idea to come up with stuff that, is like plot-driven and things like that. I mean, if you come up with, who was the key grip on Motel Hell, I mean,
well, Justin know that? Justin would know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was on a tangent, I was watching Airplane 2, the sequel, on the television last night, and in their credits they have the best boy and whatever his name is, and then directly underneath that, worst boy, Adolf Hitler, which I thought was kind of fun.
That's funny.
Although I do think worst boy should have been Justin Kurzweil.
I remember, I don't remember what movie it was, but I was watching a movie once, and one of the key grips, or it might have been one of the stunt coordinators, but his name was Axel G. Reese.
Axel G. Reese, cool.
Nice.
So, actually, talking of Airplane 2, we're having a party here where we're showing a double bill on a projector onto the wall of Airport 75, followed by Airplane.
Cool.
And we're serving snacks on airport trays.
Well, Justin, since you're having an airplane party, I just want to wish you all good luck. We're all counting on you.
Thank you.
Airport 75 is the Karen Blank Karen Black one, is it?
It is. The air stewardess is flying the plane.
Yeah.
Which is really great because it's the one that Airplane kind of basically riffs off the most because it's the one with, it's got Linda Blair in it as well as the dying teenager or the very ill teenager, and it's got Helen Reddy as the singing nun. So I'm sure we're going to try and make it fancy dress as well. So either people come in, come in on a stretcher, or they come as a nun with a guitar.
Somebody could come as a nun.
Somebody come as an air hostess. That would probably be you, Justin. Will you be dressed as an air hostess?
I don't know. Well, you have to wait to see the photos.
Looking forward to that.
Yes. Okay. But anyway,
I have to say, as you guys know, this is my last podcast as an unmarried man.
Oh, yes.
And I have to fly to where we're going to get married, and I'm absolutely petrified. Flying scares me to death. I'm afraid the plane's going to crash.
You'll be all right.
Statistically, you're more likely to get killed in a car crash than you are an airplane crash.
Hmm.
Statistically, you're more likely to enjoy Halloween by Rob Zombie.
Should I not watch Airport 75 before I fly?
No,
you'll be fine because what you should watch it because then you get tips for when the pilots are sucked out of the
front of the plane I can land it
and everyone's screaming and they're going to die. Then you can run in and land it, and then get married.
That's like on the Simpsons where Marge is afraid of flying. So Homer's like, I rented you some movies to get over your fear of flying. Alive, Fear, Fearless, or whatever it was for Jeff Bridges.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't watch Fearless, maybe.
Okay.
Airport 75 is a lot of fun. I think it's great. It's got but it's probably best if you've got a phobia about flying, I'd probably steer clear of airport crash movies.
Yes. Here's some tenuosity. I don't know if that's a real word. I just made it up, but
I like
it. We were talking about Robert Saatchi, and he was in Die Hard 2. I think Die Hard 2 has one of the most realistic, terrifying plane crashes of any movie. So there you go.
Okay, we could watch that, Nathan.
Yeah. There. Perfect. Anyway, I need to get my pilot's license. That way I could land the plane.
Well, congratulations to Nathan and Wes.
Yes,
anyway.
Congratulations. Thank you.
The happy couple, all the best.
And just so you know,
I hope you survived the flight.
Just so you know, Nathan and Wes, their engagement was officiated by Amy Steele.
Mm-hmm. This is true. Mm-hmm. She helped him out.
Yep.
So, yes. Well, next time when we do the podcast, and we can blame Nathan for the 3-week delay. So that's the only negative.
Well, but I asked Wes, fans, just so the fans know, I did ask Wes if I could do the podcast because I'm actually, the day that we would be filming is going to be the actual wedding day. So I asked him if he'd be okay if while we're giving our vows, I'm doing the podcast simultaneously. But he said if I did that, we would not be getting married. So, well,
Justin, you're married, right? Or are you just, married or you just live in like?
Well, living in sin.
Living in sin, no. I'm kind of married. Huh. I'm in a civil partnership, which is a similar
thing. Well, I mean, so I guess me and Eric are the only single guys.
Yeah, we're still single boys.
Ooh. Let's go to the bar, Eric.
Yeah.
A bear bar.
Yeah.
A bear bar. I went past a bear bar last night, actually.
In Bristol?
In London. Mm. Well, I went past it. We drove past in a taxi.
King's Arms?
It was called... Well, no, it's something called XXXL.
XXXL, yeah. It's a nightclub rather than a bar.
Mm. Oh, right, yeah, sorry. There were lots of hirsute gentlemen standing outside smoking.
Yeah. Mm. They won't be getting my winkle if they smoke.
Okay, well, we've gone off on a tangent.
Yeah,
so,
sorry, we have.
But yes, thanks for that last bit of feedback, and we will definitely take that into consideration. And I think it's probably when we get to... an anniversary show, I think we maybe should do a special one where we pull things like that together or Eric pulls something off. Okay, who would like to go next?
Me.
Okay.
Okay, this is from Tristan. He says, hi there once again. This is Tristan, who has messaged you guys before asking about doing future episodes about movies like Mad Men, The Dorm That Dripped Blood, Tourist Trap, etc. I've recently listened to the Mad Men podcast, and once again, you guys did not disappoint. I've recently downloaded the movie for me and my granny to watch. I have to say, Jason may be more famous, but I can't help but think I'd be more frightened to encounter Mad Men Mars. Talk about menacing looking. I've also downloaded MP3s of the Slumber Party Massacre soundtrack and a great song from Sleepaway Camp, You're Just What I've Been Looking For by Frank Vinci. I've also had the pleasure of communicating a bit with Felisa Rose on Twitter, who really seems like quite the sweetheart. I haven't listened to every single podcast in the archive yet, but if you guys haven't already, do you have any plans to do a top three favourite soundtracks in a future episode? Also, now that The Dorm That Dripped Blood is on the mind, I've been thinking about John Hemmett and Bobby Lee, who were killed and blamed for the murders, and also Jennifer and Craig from the 1989 film Intruder, who are arrested at the end of the movie. Spoiler alert, I should have said before that. It's got me wondering if there may be a future top three based on these scenarios. I'm tempted to say top three scapegoats, but I'm not sure if that's the right word. I've also wondered if you guys plan to do top three favourite weapons that the killers and slashers have used. But anyways, I'll always be eagerly anticipating the next episode. I also left a review for the podcast on iTunes. Have a good one, and that's from Tristan, although it's spelt T-R-I-S-T-I-A-N, so it could be Tristian. I'm not sure.
Okay, well, sorry, Tristan or Tristian.
Yeah.
But
we've done top three favorite soundtracks, have we not? Our top three favorite.
We did music.
Yeah.
We did songs. We didn't do soundtracks. We could do sound. I suppose it would be. Have to look back to see if we did songs or they were. I think it was songs, wasn't it?
I think so.
So maybe
actually
looking at soundtrack overall might be quite good.
I thought we did weapons too.
Yeah. Our top three favorite ways to die or death scenes or something, which would be along the same lines. Yeah. Top three scapegoats. I'm not sure if many films end in the same way as Dorm the Drip Blood and Intruder. I think they're probably the only two, actually, that I can think of.
Unless he's also thinking about just people who, you know, were thought to be the killer throughout the movie.
Oh, right.
Even if they didn't get, you know, even fingered. If they found out they were innocent,
That would be top three red herrings, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, we could do top three red herrings. We need someone to jot these down, because every time someone writes them in top three, we always go, oh, yeah, that sounds interesting, and then we don't ever do it.
Yeah.
I like the red herrings idea, because I already have my number one in mind.
Okay, well, how about next time we do top three red herrings?
Sounds good.
We've got 3 weeks to come up with them, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go. So we do listen to you if you write in. We don't just make fun of you. Really. So no, thank you, Tristan. And I hope your granny liked Madman.
Yeah, I know.
I wish my granny, well, they're both dead now, but I wish they'd liked Horror Movies.
Just the way you said that. I wish my granny, oh, well, they're both dead now. Kind of flipped about it, Justin.
Well, it's a bit like in Graduation Day when she says, oh, you've got lovely eyes. My sister had lovely eyes. She's dead now.
Gotta run.
Gotta go. I wonder where he got the Slumber Party Massacre soundtrack from.
It's on YouTube.
Was there a vinyl release of that?
Yes.
There was quite recently. Yeah. So excellent. Okay. Shall I go next, or do you want to go next, Joseph?
I already went.
Actually, I think it's me.
Oh, sorry. Well, do you want to go next, Nathan?
Yeah, I can. It says, hey, fellas, love the show. I just wanted to quickly stress to you how important it is for the Jello fans of the group to see Astron 6's The Editor, if it comes to a theater near you. Surely you're aware of it, but having just caught up with it at TIFF, I'm not sure what that is, I immediately had to get in touch. The Editor is a hilarious spot-on homage to the giallo, showcasing the ridiculousness of a genre at its most outrageous. As a fan of the genre, it's the perfect love letter. And that's from Chris Jiggins.
Right. Well, thank you, Chris. I have seen the trailer for The Editor, and also the artwork for the poster, and it looks really...
The poster
really,
is excellent.
Yeah, the poster looks really good. I mean, it's kind of spoofs and things like that can sometimes work and not. So it's, you know, for every airplane, there's about five, I don't know what bad spoofs are, but there's a lot, you know, unfunny spoofs. Well, like, you know, like all that Scary Movie.
Epic Movie and all them, yeah.
Yeah, all those. So it'd be interesting. I'd like to see this, because it seems to be quite a few... Giallo kind of things, obviously the Amir and the Strange Colour of Your Body's Tears or whatever it's called. But there's also one, a kind of giallo from Argentina, I think it, or somewhere in South America that's coming out. I don't think it's this one. But anyway, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So, yeah, look out for that. So, excellent. Well, that was a short and sweet, but I've got a slightly longer one here. says, hi, thought I'd send some feedback. As a fellow former alt-horror cohort of Justin, although I'm still there. Now, back in the day, me and Joseph and Nathan, and unfortunately we've spoken about this, and Joseph used to bully Nathan.
I was the Eric back then.
I don't remember that. I met Nathan through the forums, but he was like, I was on alt-horror, and I never knew who he was.
I think I posted as Stranger or something like that. I can't remember.
Well, alt-horror, I dip back in there. Like, it's the old news groups with the forums before, you know, like... I mean, they were way back to 1999, weren't they? Or even earlier, I think. The news groups, yeah. So Gareth he still is posting on there. And he always ended up with his anal love dog. I seem to remember it was his handle, as it were. And I never really understood what that was.
When people would ask for a movie title, it would either be Motel Hell, Necrophiles, or Anal Love Dog.
Yes. All very strange. But Gareth has written in and he said, I recently heard of the podcast. I felt like Mary Hopkins in Those Were the Days song when she finds out all her old friends still went to the pub. They simply failed to invite her. Oh, Gareth. What a shame. But
I remember him.
You remember him? Well, exactly.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. I've since been listening to old episodes on the commute to work and back each day. A very pleasant listen. Enjoyed the Texas Chainsaw Massacre look back. It was one of those films that was so hyped up before I saw it that it couldn't help but disappoint a little. I was once tempted to buy it at a car boot sale in Oxford years before it was unbanned here in the UK. It was a very battered-looking Betamax cassette that the seller wanted a crazy £30 for. And we've spoken about boot fairs. It's the, you know, the kind of garage sales, but, you know, you have them in the States. But you used to be able to pick up old pre-cert videos, and that's kind of where I picked up Savage Water all those years ago. He says, I finally saw it after buying a bootleg from an ad in the old Exchange and Mark magazine, along with lots of other banned titles. I next saw it on its cinema re-release. For some reason, the whole Pax cinema found it unintentionally hilarious, guffawing at all manner of things. At one point, when the cook was poking Sally with a broom, some wag shouted out, "It's a Texas broomstick massacre!" And the cinema erupted in laughter. That must be Eric.
God,
that's
so
you, Eric?
Lame.
Was
so
that you,
lame.
Eric?
It wasn't me.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Sounds Eric's like jokes are better than that.
Yeah, thank you, Nathan.
Now who's the bully, Nathan? Bullying some guy from alt horror.
Exactly.
Oh, I was bullying whoever made that joke about
the
broom.
Yes, that's what I'm bullying as well.
And they're bullying Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'm bullying the bully.
Okay. Well, Gareth goes on to say, I also have a childhood playground memory in which a friend seriously told me that people were killed for real in the film. Poor people had agreed to die for real at the end of Chainsaw in exchange for their family being given $1 million. Did you hear that rumor? It's the kind of thing that was kind of made up in school playgrounds, though. So I'm sure I've heard similar things. It's like people being paid $1 million to listen to Toya's album.
Hey.
I don't believe it. Sure. But he goes on to say, I didn't get a VCR in my home until I was 16, so I missed out on the video nasty fun. I think the first film I ever rented was Elm Street 3. So anyway, I'll end the message and say, keep up the good work. You have another subscriber, and I continue pulling out choice episodes while waiting for new ones from Gareth. So thank you, Gareth. It's funny that I've popped back into alt horror recently to say hello, and it's full of the usual kind of mixture of mentalists, right-wing nut jobs, and people trying to talk about horror movies. So
I posted on there about a year ago to kind of promote the night before Easter, and a lot of people actually remembered me from my old screen name. But I think what ended up running me out of there was that whole smiley fiasco. You remember that, yeah. Justin?
Yes.
The icon smiley, the wrestling fans.
Yeah. They used to kind of like bizarre kind of swooping in by wrestling fans, and they would just be these kind of, it was all very bizarre. But it was quite good fun. It was very anarchic. Yeah. Very anarchic, but yeah, no, thank you, Gareth. So that was a nice. You always enjoy a big swell bag of mail. So I think that's it, isn't it? I think we've wrapped it up. So Eric, it is your choice next time.
It is, and we're staying in Europe, but it's not a giallo. all you Giallo haters will be glad to hear. It's a bona fide slasher. We're going to Cannes in the south of France for the last horror film with Carolyn Monroe and Joe Spinell.
Yes. Oh. So if you want to watch along, make sure you watch that. And yeah, that's going to be a good one, isn't it?
Maniac to prepare.
Mm. Well, also, as we said before, there will be a kind of small gap because we're going to be away for 3 weeks. So for Nathan's nuptials, which sounds a bit rude, doesn't it, vaguely?
But it does. Sounds like Nathan's genitals or something.
He's getting his nuptials toasted.
Well.
Yes. but yes, that's a mental image, isn't
Nathan,
it?
Nathan, I have a question for you. Are you going in, are you going to like a courthouse? Or are you going to like a preacher? Or are you going the atheist route, just going to a courthouse?
No, it's not a courthouse. It's going to be in a park. And we found someone who's actually, she can do the ceremony.
She's ordained.
Wes is handling most of that. But yeah, it's gonna be in a park. We have one wedding guest.
Who's your best man?
We don't have one. We have one guest at the wedding, and that's it.
You have your staff.
Who's the guest? Is it his parents?
No, it's a friend of ours.
Can I have a wild bachelor party?
No.
Can I be your worst man?
Sure.
You should have gone to Las Vegas and got Ilsa to marry you.
Well, I thought it's not legal there.
Ask Wes if I can Skype in and be your worst man.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to hold the phone up, for Skype.
It's like Joey on Friends.
Phone up for Make sure you don't say Rachel at the altar now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll try not to say Rachel.
I'm ashamed I know that reference, though.
There's nothing wrong with Friends. I think it's brilliant.
I like a lot of the sort of the middle era when Ross started becoming Red Ross crazy.
Yeah.
The earlier seasons where it's all hugging and schmalty, I hate that.
See, I guess I'm kind of with Eric on this because to me, when Friends is funny, it's hysterical and I love it. But when they try to get too serious, like that god awful marriage proposal between Monica and Chandler, that was horrible. If that episode's on, I can't watch it. I can watch most of them, but I can't watch that one because it's just so forced.
My favorite episode of Friends of all time is the one where Ross and Joey take a nap together. That was so funny.
Watching Die Hard.
Yeah. Die Hard!
Well,
anyway, yes.
It's not the Friends podcast. Let's remember that. Okay, so after...
Hey, now wait a minute. You can go off on tangents on Susie and Toya, but I can't make one Friends reference?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So congratulations again to Nathan and Wes, and he will be...
Thank you.
He will be a married man next time we come on the podcast.
Mm. I give it 2 weeks.
We've lived together for 2 years. I think we'll manage.
I'm sure you'll be very happy together. So, but to serenade you, what other better way could they possibly be than a Humphrey Bogart lookalike singing Jungle Queen?
There's no better way.
There's no better way. So we're going to play out with that in one moment, and we'll be back with a trip to Cannes with Joe Spinell and Carolyn Monroe, and Eric's going to be taking us there.
Yes.
So, we'll see you then. So thanks for listening, and see you all soon. So say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, dorks.
And Nathan?
Nathan, you want to say goodbye?
I did, but I think I was drowned out because I don't talk very loud. Bye.
Well, you said like a sheep.
Bye. Bye.
My name is Sammy Daps, a white private eye in Mumubuti, Africa. When millionaire Howard H. Farnsworth hired me to find a jungle queen, that's when it all started.
How are the experiments going on Joseph's head? How is Justin?
It was not.
It was. You're drinking a beer. I can hear it from the background.
I'm drinking oolong tea.
You're always drinking something hippie-ish.
After he advanced me a good chunk of dough, I took the job.
What kind of knickers are you wearing, Joseph? Silky ones.
Gym shorts.
Eric, what kind of knickers are you wearing?
It's kind of a G-string.
must have been no bigger than 2 foot six. And pig knees, I asked him.
It was mostly when Eric was talking, so it's okay.
Hate you. You whore!
But there was that Eric, because you there was that time that you beat off all those men that came at you.
Was that rough on you, Eric?
It wasn't. That happens quite regularly.
That was a Turkish prison, wasn't it?
I moved into the marshes with a jungle steam. Again that bird shall whistle through. I was closer to the queen now, that I knew. The pig.
Bon voyage.
I do
That's
have
not very nice.